House Committee on Judiciary, Friday, June 17th, 1977, Room 354, full committee, 1:30 p.m., work session.
Committee will come to order. Clerk will note those members present. Representative Lombard is excused. Senate Bill 660.
This is the bill about access, employees having access to personnel records. There are proposed amendments in the bill book from the Executive Department. There were basically three main issues. One was about letters of reference, and everybody seemed to be agreed that letters of reference should be exempted from the provisions of the bill. And then the big questions were where the records may be inspected, and that brings in the question of originals versus copies and whether originals should be shipped all around the place. And at what time or when employees should have access, when they can request copies, when employers are required to provide copies. And we have a letter from Mr. Bieberness, which is in response to the proposed amendments.
Take a look at the representative.
I thought you might want a motion. You want to go?
Well, I was going to address the individual amendments of the Executive Department, some of which may be acceptable, some of which are not. I thought I'd get that clear first. Now, in line 9, the First Amendment requested is to...
Does somebody have the amendments? I looked in my bill book.
I don't seem to have
them
either.
Mine was in my bill book right behind the bill.
Behind the bill?
Or in front of the bill.
In front of the bill.
In front of the
bill.
Nope. I've got it.
I know yours is that because I checked your book. I think that would be Yeah, it looks like a letter.
It's on a Personnel Division Executive Department letterhead, dated June 9th. Do you have it, Representative Fumler?
Yes, I can.
Okay. First proposed amendment, Representative Dugas, do you have it?
Yeah.
Okay. First proposed amendment is in line 9, after the words United States, to insert the words confidential reports from previous employers. So if the line would read, the section would read, personnel records do not include records of an individual relating to conviction, arrest, or investigation of conduct constituting a violation of criminal law of this state or of another state of the United States, comma, confidential reports from previous employers. I guess that, was treated as the equivalent of letters of reference.
Yes. The person who testified from the Personnel Division said it would be all right with them to substitute letters of reference for that line.
Chair. Representative Fulmer.
May I just, I know we're in work session, but I would like to ask Mr. Price what his, since he has very active interest in this legislation, what his view of that proposed amendment is.
We would be agreeable to letters of reference.
All right. I'm sorry about that. I'd move the adoption of that amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Now, are you adopting the wording of the Personnel Division's proposal.
I know, letters of preference, but I want to be... Well, no, wait a minute.
I'm not sure the term letters of reference is quite the term that you want to use.
Yeah, it didn't send a letter of reference, but a previous employer called up and the prospective employer made notes of the telephone conversation. That would be equivalent to, in effect, to a letter of reference, except that it would be an employment record of the employee to which he'd be entitled to access if he later came on the job. By just saying letter of reference or excluding, and really confidential reports may be a better term to use now that I think about it.
Yeah, I think that's...
I would move the executive department language, confidential reports from previous employers.
All right, Representative Frommeyer moves that in line 9, after the words United States, to insert comma, confidential reports from previous employers. Okay, that's it. Discussion. Is there any objection? Line 12, the proposed amendment is at the end of the line to insert or at the location where the records are filed. So if the sub 2 would read, at the request of an employee, his employer shall provide reasonable opportunity for the employee to inspect at the place of his employment or place of work assignment or at the location where the records are filed. Now, I think this is the central remaining issue which we were dealing with at the hearing the other night. Representative Rutherford?
It seems to me that the reasonable thing to do is to provide the employee the opportunity to inspect the original record, so when we make copies from it at his expense, that inspection should occur, that the record should be sent to the employee's immediate supervisor, and that is the place in which the inspection reasonably should be made. I think that it's unreasonable to require an employee to go to the home office to inspect the records.
Right. If the committee is in agreement, no action would be necessary with respect to moving the building, as I would.
Well, I think
it's that part of the bill.
I think so, because it does seem to me that the language is a bit vague at the present time. For one thing, it doesn't say whether or not it goes to the media supervisor. It does leave open what its placement. It says at placement or place of work assignment. And that may or may not be convenient to the employee. I don't know what work assignment means or place of employment might mean to people who work in remote locations. Sometimes if people are assigned to particular areas, so this is your area, but in fact they're off someplace else. I would like, as long as we're going to do this, to have it clear where the record goes.
It seems to me that in most cases you could allow them to inspect the original record at some place that was designated by the employer, as long as you were willing to provide them, say, a certified copy of the record at the employee's expense. I would think that would be a reasonable compromise.
I think the employee should be able to examine the original record and make copies thereof, including, you know, the records jacket, as an example, or file forward, things of that nature. Which wouldn't necessarily come if you asked for copies of the records.
The only problem, Mr. Chairman, the only problem I see with that, Bill, is that you're going to have all these things sent through the mails.
Right.
There's the possibility not only of loss, but also the possibility that someone intervening in the chain of possession there could alter, perhaps add to. And I just think that it's a lot better to keep them in one central place, as long as, you know, you have maybe an inventory of what's in the record and a certified copy of all the documents in the record.
Well, I was thinking, just take it as an example. You had a case and you asked for a file, medical file.
Yeah.
You would not accept copies. You would insist upon seeing the original file, including the jacket. You'd want to see everything about that. And I think that that is what the employee is entitled to hear. I agree with you that there is some risk in sending it, but I think that that risk, while there, is slight, and it has to be weighed against the employee's interest in examining the records, which I think is quite high.
That's the basis for the risk. Well, if someone certifies something's an accurate copy and gives you a complete list of what's in the file and just xeroxes it off, I don't see why there's a necessity to look at the original itself. And if there is a necessity, someone's writing these, and then I don't think it's unreasonable in those circumstances to have the employee go to where the central record is located.
Would you try a case based upon the opponent's representation that they need the full file without examining the real?
I would try a case in a situation where I may have someone in that city go there and on the phone inventory as to what was in the file. I don't think I'd necessarily have to see the...
You mean somebody working for you would examine the file?
Yeah, someone could go there and say that these documents consist of the total file, and I'd check it off against what I had.
But either you or somebody working for you would examine the original file.
Yeah.
I think that's right, and I think that's what applies here. The employee, since the employee can't send a designated representative, the employer should be entitled to see the original file.
Let's see if we can bring this to a decision. Representative Rutherford, do you have any further amendment to propose to the description of place where the original records may be examined?
Well, it seemed to me that it would be reasonable that they be examined, that the records be sent to the employee's immediate supervisor, and that the employee could examine them at that location.
Well, it would be my interpretation that the present wording of the bill allows that. Certainly, the present wording of the bill was advanced to permit that.
All right.
And
I would share an interpretation of that.
But I'm willing to be persuaded otherwise. I certainly don't see this language as precluding the employer from involving a supervisor at the work location, let's say, in effect, kind of keeping possession of the file or monitoring the file or whatever, or being involved at least with the actual handling of the file.
Mr. Chairman,
is it for where?
I think the legislative history has been made, and I wouldn't know how to word it any differently to make it more clear.
I think this colloquy has been sufficient.
Okay, so as the issue is right between in your discussion, unless the bill is amended, this will be resolved in favor of the position taken by Representative Rutherford. Okay? The next amendment proposed is in line 16 to delete the words "of such records once each year" and insert "any record not previously provided to the employee." The legislature's recollection that during the initial hearing there was general agreement that that was a sensible amendment.
I raised it.
I'm sorry.
Representative Myers, members of the committee, I think we offered an amendment at that time to kind of go along with this language today.
You're right. Let me see if I can.
have the wording, I wrote it down. Any record on line 16 deletes such records once each year, inserts any record not previously furnished the employee whenever the employer commences termination or other disciplinary measures against the employee. And I think the only thing that was brought out about any of either of these two proposals is that the employee might lose something, and then the employer could say, I've already furnished it. Literal interpretation of the language.
Chairman. Mr. Longhorn.
It seems to me that we may be unduly restrictive if we restrict this right of access to either once each year, or if we restrict it to just, you know, immediately before a termination or disciplinary proceeding. And as long as we're allowing the employer to make a charge for the copy of the records, Is there any necessity to really set how a time limit of how often or how many copies you can request?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gardner.
As I understand at this point, that's not what's happening. What's happening is the file is being sent to the employee, and then the employee at that point is making copies from that if he so desires. That's the position that Representative Rumsford has taken, and that's the legislative history as understood by the committee on the bill. So you have, I suppose, the possibility of having the records sent more than once in a year's time, I suppose, if the person wanted to inspect the original record.
Mr. Chairman,
let's separate the issues here. This does not appear to restrict the number of times within any given time period that an employer or employee might examine the original record. Doesn't do that specifically.
No, I don't read it as doing that.
Okay, now it goes on to say, at the request of the employee, his employer shall furnish a true copy of such records once each year. Now, where would we be if we simply deleted the words once each year and left it to the employer, simply vested the employee with the prerogative of requesting a copy of the record?
Mr. Chairman. My interpretation of that is that irrespective of the employee's right to have the original jacket delivered to his immediate supervisor, his place of employment, that at any other time, or even then, but that at any time, the employee may request a true copy of the records, if he's willing to pay for it. And I would also like to add, I know there's some concern about from the proponents of the bill about certified, verified, what have you, with regards to the true copy. I would like to offer an amendment that would insert the word certified before the word true in line 16, so that the request would be made for a certified true copy. And I interpret that simply to mean that, as we do so often in the legal profession, stamp a document, certified true copy, and sign it, and that's basically what we're talking about.
I wonder if we even need to say certified true as opposed to certified
copy
for statutory.
Certified copy. Let me, for discussion purposes, make this motion then that.
Let's take that one first.
Okay, that insert the word certified in place of true.
those of you who are here who are concerned with the bill, if you have a problem with any suggestions that you made or comments, feel free to speak out. I personally don't see any problem with that particular change. I think it is a little bit closer to the usage that we're trying to get to. Representative Lombard moves in line 16 that the word certified be substituted for the word true. Is there further discussion? Any objection? Okay, Representative Lombard, you
can I would further move that on line 16 that we delete the phrase once each year and put a period after the word reference.
Any discussion?
Chairman?
Mr.
Trumbull? I'm trying to think what could happen on a deal like this. I recall the reason 351065 is exempted is because the Board of Higher Education already has statutes similar to this. And there are occasions, Kip, where an employee will say, I'm being considered for promotion and tenure. I don't know when things are going to be added to my file. I hereby submit a request that anytime any new piece of paper is put in my file, I immediately be given a Xerox copy of it. So that in effect, you've got a paper flow issue. Whether it's a problem or not, I'm not sure. But that's what could arise under the language as you phrase it. It's just, in effect, the employee puts in a standing order for access to the pieces of the files that are being accumulated rather than putting a burden on the employee where maybe it doesn't go long to go look at it.
Well, I don't...
Well, it wouldn't cause me to reject your language, but I don't know if that's a ramification of it. Maybe...
You know, it's really between a rock and a hard place, I suppose, in a sense, because as I say, I feel that the once each year is unnecessarily restrictive.
I agree with you.
And some people may not object to a standing order. Some of the testimony before us was that some companies do that already as a matter of policy, send out a copy of any new entries to their personnel files. And that I can see that it might become a rather onerous thing. It's not my intention, I suppose, really, in making this amendment that permit a standing request for any and all new entries. I can see where that could become, unless it were a matter of personnel practice, could become an administrative burden. But I don't know how you would otherwise or could otherwise address that.
That's the viewers.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a larger problem with this bill and this kind of bill. I'm happy that the gentlemen are here from this possible court. I spent about 12 years in day-to-day occupation of labor negotiations. I was on the management side. But I fear, and I'm going to vote consistently on these bills, I fear that what is happening here is another step in several that I've seen this session to use this legislature, and more specifically in this room, this body, as a sort of an alternate to a grievance procedure or an arbitration board. Now, here we have, transportation workers. I want the record to show that I'm firmly in favor of labor negotiation, organized labor, and the open bargaining system. This, to me, is a negotiable item. I personally was involved with an organization, Amalgamated Meat Cutters, when on the East Coast, the company I was bargaining for, the union, the local I was bargaining with, had not had, before that time, access to personnel records. They very quickly and emphatically made that a strong point of their negotiating demands and forced it. I firmly believe they were right. We negotiated it. They ought to have access to their personnel records. But they ought to have it as a matter of right as far as organized labor goes. It's a negotiable item in labor negotiations. And unless this situation prevails with a union or a labor body, a body of employees who do not have access to collective bargaining, or who are impeded in some way, like maybe, and I'm not convinced whether this is right or wrong, like maybe the public employees might be, that in essence you've got a negotiable item here that you should negotiate for and get over the negotiating table. And the fact that you may not have, now I see a number of grievances, we have nothing more or less than a series of grievances here as a justification. Some took place in Alabama, some Georgia, some somewhere else. I don't even see anything that's happened like this in Oregon. I have no doubt that it may have or will. But I sincerely believe you folks have a right to your personnel files. But I don't think you ought to use legislation as a means of mandating it. I think it's very possible that the next thing we'll see is the teachers coming in with a tough item that they haven't gotten in a specific instance. Yeah. We have already seen that the communications are concerned. No, I don't think we'll ever see the teams. And I don't think you'll ever see the meat cutters. I know a little more about them than I do you folks. But I'll tell you this, I worry that we might see others trooping in one after the other on an item that was dealt with tough in the negotiation. They lost there, they're going to come here and get it. And I just think it's an unwarranted intrusion by the legislature in the collective bargaining process. And I'm going to consistently vote against bills like this because I think it's a... I would resent it on management side, and we're inviting the management to come in next time and ask for something else. And I don't want to do another two-year stint or any other kind of stint in labor negotiations when I'm not getting paid as a negotiator. And if we're getting paid to legislate, I don't think it's a warranted area of action for legislation.
Chairman?
Mr. Mayor?
Just a quick response, Ted, which may or may not be one. There are an awful lot of employers and employees that this applies to that would not be covered by collective bargaining arrangements at all. So that if you left it to the negotiating table, you'd be leaving a lot of employees out of the cold. And if you agree, as you said, that you think it is a desirable item, then we're not going to touch it. If we don't pass this, those people are without any protection at all.
Who are they?
Well, employer has meaning that it does in 656.005.
Here's 650. I got the section. There's no one. That volume wasn't there when I got it, so I got it.
The workman's compensation definition.
Huh?
It's the workman's compensation.
What is 656.005?
05.005.
While you're looking, we have before us, Representative Lombard's further motion to delete the words once each year.
Question?
I don't think we're quite at the point. The issues that are being discussed now are a little more global. They go really to the whole bill. I'd like to get the contents resolved. Is there further discussion of the motion to delete the language once each year? In line 16, is there any objection?
Just a point for clarification, because this has come up again in the higher education context. When we're talking about this bill and the employee's right of access, we're talking only about an employee who is currently employed, are we not? That is, I would think that upon the termination or resignation of the employee, that the right of access to past employer's records would no longer exist.
Mr. Chairman?
I'd like that to be understood as part of the legislative history.
Past employees' records could have a great deal of bearing on a present or prospective employer's decision, however.
I understand that, but as I read the language now, it seems to me that the right of access exists only when you are currently occupying an employer-employee relationship, that it's present tense, right?
Well, suppose you have a situation in which suppose you have a discharge case, which is then taken into arbitration, grieved and unresolved and taken into arbitration. Now, technically, you have an ex-employee, but you have a case which is in which the records would be rather routinely sought, I would think.
Well, couldn't the arbitrator compel their production? Irrespective of what the employee just excuse the statutory right. Now, I would assume, actually, that for the employer to carry the burden, there is that you'd have to come forward to the evidence.
Are all of these, Mr. Craig, questions, are all these, maybe to any of you who know, the state, any of the state agencies, counties, municipal corporations, school districts, other public corporations, and political subdivisions, that's the definition of employer contemplated. Do they not, the employees not, by and large, have collective bargaining rights?
Not because of the Hermiston decision, which was the
okay, home rule. Okay, what does that pertain to? Home rule? Municipal subdivisions?
Yes.
Okay, we know they do in the city.
Cities and counties.
The state does, right?
School district.
School district.
That's just about it.
So really what we're talking about here is cities and states?
Counties. Non-home rule. And a number of them have some version of collective bargaining.
For a moment, for the point Representative Fulmer was raising, but so I'm not sure, Representative Fulmer, that the bill can be confined quite that tightly. Of course, its language would appear to do that.
Well, it says that his employment or place of work assignment, which is a fortiori gone when you're no longer working.
Yeah. Well, I guess as it's literally applied, in situations in which the person to whom the records pertain is an ex-employee, I'm a bit worried. I guess we're going to be talking primarily about, well, one thing about arbitration situations in which the discharge itself is being arbitrated. Ted, you've arbitrated more than I have. I've done some. Have you arbitrated discharge cases? Now, in those cases, are the personnel records normally produced as a matter of...
Well, most of the contractors, they have a cause factor. Cause, and it's a notice requirement. And they usually produce the records to show that they've given you prior notice, and they usually document what he's done. I guess the thing is, I don't see the bill having any impact on that whatsoever. I'm more concerned if you establish a legislative policy that the employee isn't entitled to them when he ends his employment. I think he's probably correct as an arbiter to say a fact that produced the record. What I'd be concerned about is if you destroy it, because the guy says he's lost his employment. So I'm not going to mess around with him anymore. I think the only way of reading it that you're going to resolve your problem, David, is if you had another sentence drafted that would say that after upon termination of employment, the employer shall be only required to maintain a record for 30 days or something to give the employee an opportunity to receive a certified copy of it.
Well, I would change that to 60 days. And make that as a conceptual motion, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Further discussion? Any objection?
Chairman. Mr. Fulmer? I would go to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Okay.
My hand is closed.
Further discussion?
Then we're actually guaranteeing the access of personnel records for everybody who is covered by this definition of employer, whether or not there's a collective bargaining agreement. Are there are there any rights to records that have been negotiated under the collective bargaining agreements that the public employees have now obtained? Because all the material I read here refers to private employment. There didn't seem to be anything on point, since we're talking only public employees.
There's another statute that's relating to personnel records of public employees, school teachers, and their rights under the statutes to obtain copies of evaluations and things like that.
Okay, because Mr. Chairman, if I can continue my tirade of a minute ago, isn't very applicable, because I thought this referred to also private employers, and I would resist that completely.
Well,
it does refer to some people who have collective bargaining agreements, and in essence, we're bargaining for them. We're making a resolution that takes away a bargaining point somewhere along the line. Now, I think it's right, again, to have access to your record.
Ted, I'm somewhat concerned about if you think the bill is only applicable to public employers, because I'm somewhat concerned if the UTU is introducing this bill, because I don't know why they would be introducing the bill if it only is applicable to public employers. I don't think it's intended to do that. It's intended to be applicable to all employers in the state.
It is.
That's how I read it.
Yeah, this covers all employers, public and private.
It does include all of them.
Yeah, it includes all of them.
Any discussion?
If I could, in the amendment that has been put in on line 9 after United States is the phrase confidential reports from previous employers. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
I'm somewhat concerned, in fact, that the phrase confidential reports is not just opening the whole door, because, one, I don't know who the confidentiality exists between. Who invokes it? I mean, isn't it in fact that every time you want that an employee could take away, an employer could delete something from the personnel file by merely saying it's confidential? Is he the one that invokes it? Is the previous employer the one that invokes the confidentiality? Or is it the present employer?
Well, I assume it means information received in confidence and offered in confidence. And I suppose that that's a relationship between the both of them.
I think that phrase is so broad, and I just...
Do you have a further proposed amendment?
Well, I would, in fact, if you want to put letters of reference in there, I feel much more secure with that than I do confidential reports from previous employers.
We went through that before you came. The reason that was changed. Were you here when we were talking? Because you can do the same thing by calling up the previous employer. You write down notes or a summary or dictate what the conversation was. That's not protected, even though it is the same thing as a
letter of reference. You know, one of the things that they're trying to get at in this, and I know it happens all the time, is that I say that if you work for me and you come to me and you say, will you give me a letter of reference? And I say, fine. So I write down and I say, who it may concern, so-and-so, you know, great law professor and all this, and then as soon as you got the letter of reference and you're gone, I pick up the phone and I say to Bugis, you know, Bugis calls me because he always asks me, you care if I contact your previous employer? And you say, fine, I've got this letter of reference. So Bugis calls me and I say, listen, guy's a bum. I just gave him that letter to get him off my back. You're crazy if you hire him. And that's what I think is the real thing that they're after. I didn't mean anything.
This is all
That's the thing that I think if Mr. Price is up here that they're very, very concerned about in that type of a situation. And I think that if you got that, the way that confidence reports that, everybody's going to come through. And the bill doesn't mean anything.
Of course, the bill was originally introduced excluded those, didn't it? Didn't the bill, as it was originally introduced, exclude letters of reference?
Yes, it did.
The original bill, and I have it right here, does not include letters of reference or records of individuals.
And that's why I said, if they're willing to go with that, I'd rather narrow it down further than the confidential reports.
Representative Gardner.
Well, it seems to me that if it's coming from a previous employer, it has to be prior to the fact of employment or near the time of employment. And it seems to me there should be a right on the previous employer's part and the present employer to be able to communicate in a confidential manner about the prospective employee. I think you can make an absolute distinction between that situation and the situation where the guy gets hired. And then at that point, things happen vis-a-vis that relationship between the employer and the employee, which the employee has a right to access to those records.
Well, further discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Is there
other? Is the thing interpreted, Ted, that it says confidential?
Yes.
If you said reports from previous employers, would that?
If you're going to define what the report is, now, what happens is that the report, I don't know what a report is. I mean, is it a phone call?
Could be a phone call, could be a form that was filled out that wasn't a letter, but some employers have forms, and they mail them to previous employer, and fill in the boxes and add your comments, and they send it back. It's perhaps not a letter. So, memorandum or something that may.
Well, dropping the word confidential, Bill, is going to even broaden it further. At least I can argue that it wasn't confidential. But I feel more comfortable with a different phrase than confidential reports.
But the only phrase that you would accept would be letters.
There's a reference.
Mr. Chairman. The gentleman in the back has his hand up, and I think might have something to add.
We submitted the initial.
If you'd like to come up and give us your name so we can.
I gave it back to you. Didn't I give that amendment back to you?
Yes, but I understand what was in there. Bob Martin from Tektronix. We submitted that original amendment to this committee with regards to letters of reference. However, I would submit that after examining the one from the Employment Division, the Personnel Division, it probably better covers the overall situation that you've been discussing as far as actually the variety or alternatives of accessing reference information from previous employers. You may do it by letter, although for the expediency of the hiring process these days, you as often or more often do it by telephone, and you do record that information. At least in our case, in some sort of a summary, which is helping you evaluate the qualifications of the employee and make that hiring decision. So I guess that, in terms of the operating procedures, at least that we find in our company and others that we're familiar with, it is better, I think, from our standpoint, that you cover it a little bit broader than just the letters, because there is a broader perspective of reference information than what may just be submitted through the mail.
Is there further discussion?
Question of the witness. In favor of the bill?
We have no objection to the bill. I guess I have, since we do give that privilege to our right to our employees, it would not be consistent to oppose the bill as such. It's always a question as to whether or not because we do it that it's appropriate for it to be imposed on others.
Is your view a union shop?
No, we're non-union.
Further discussion?
I'm going to question in a different area, Mr. Chairman. Should I raise that at this time?
Different area?
In the bill, relating to the bill, okay. But not in the confidential records area.
Go ahead.
Well, I have a copied letter from a constituent who's a personnel director at a hospital, and I assume by the letter, by the day of the letter, that it was originally sent over to the Senate. So, Joan, I guess maybe I'm directing this to you. He raises the question that many employers conduct pre-employment physical examinations and annual physicals on their employees, and that these become part of the employee's personal record. And as a matter of their current policy, they hold out those portions of the personnel record and do not permit the employees to view those. Was this discussed?
No, that's the first I've heard of it. I mean, it may have been discussed in the Senate, I don't know, but nobody said anything to me about it.
I don't know how many employers
use pre-employment physical examinations.
Quite a few, I have a feeling.
This gets into that sticky medical records area. I can see the hair stand up in the back of Sandy's neck. Her ears get red.
I'm leaning more towards the bill. It's one way to get a guy's medical record.
Did you have an amendment, Representative Lombard?
Well, I thought I'd dangle the bait in the water.
Run it up the flagpole.
Form and function, as soon as I have. You have brought it to the committee's attention.
Brought it to the attention of the committee to see if there's any other, any sentiment to exempt those.
Sentiment? Yes, sir.
Could be either one or the other.
Are you making a motion?
No. I don't detect any warm response for my...
Is there further discussion? Question is on the motion to report the bill on the floor as amended to be engrossed on the due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Ugas?
No.
Brumbar?
Aye.
Gudowski?
No.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner?
No.
Myers?
Aye.
Certain notice of a possible minority.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be next to you.
Chairman, I have to testify on the bill.
There's a vote on that.
696.
53.
Specified criteria for determining a reasonable attorney fees, reasonable attorney fees, and settling on state. And the only question really that was brought up, Representative Rutherford's question about the size and complexity of the estate maybe being taken into consideration.
Well, my question was broader than that, really.
Yeah.
My statement was that the standards set forth in this bill are really those which lend themselves to litigation and have don't have a whole lot to do with what probating states are like. So subsequent to the hearing, I had a conversation with Senator Brown, suggested that he get the schedule from Multnomah County. Is a possible point of departure, and I thought the Oregon Bar might have some things too that kind of went into the areas of work that were required in connection with closing states. And those would be useful standards, but I can't see using what appears to me to be mostly a court standard for probating estates.
Is it Gardner?
I've never probated an estate. As I understand, there is a percentage fee schedule. Is that the way by statute presently?
No more.
No. It used to be that the bar published a schedule until those schedules were struck down and varied according to the composition of the estate. If you had an ongoing business, and I think the banks charge on this basis now. If you have an ongoing business, you're going to pay one thing. It's a farm. Might be the same, but if it's money lying in bank accounts, it's not going to be as much. If it's invested in the stock market, it takes more supervision, it's going to be more.
So the court sets it presently?
Approves it.
The court approves it, yeah.
So you go into court and petition for a certain amount.
Right, you set out.
What you did.
What you did. File an affidavit, say I did this, and we had. Some cases you have to file federal tax returns. Some cases you go to court with the government. Others you don't.
Further discussion? Is there a motion on the bill? Mr. Chairman Lombard?
Bill, did you work at all on any amendments or anything?
No, I just suggested Senator Brown he come in with something else because I didn't think this was satisfactory.
Gardner,
it seems to me that from what you said that that basically these are the, this is what is presently happening with perhaps more criteria being considered. And I would feel very uneasy about putting this into statute and perhaps leaving out some of the criteria in particular instances that the judge might want to consider in setting the fee.
Well, this is what I think. If we're going to put criteria in, they ought to be the proper criteria.
Well, on that point, though, it does say, and such other factors as may be relevant. There's an escape valve.
But then that doesn't leave you, that doesn't advance us any further than where we are today, because you go before the judge and say, Judge, I'm entitled to $1,000 from the state. And so he considers other factors that may be relevant.
I
do know that there has been a considerable amount of confusion among the various circuits in the state as to how the attorney's fees are to be awarded, since the antitrust case threw out the suggested fee schedule. And I found that, you know, the practice varies in different circuits. And some circuits you have to almost file an affidavit as to the work that you did and provide itemized time. And other circuits, they will accept whatever the personal representative submits in the final account and really don't ask for any itemization. And so I think that in this one instance, I think maybe some statutory guidelines may be of some assistance. So I certainly personally would not want, don't want to see the bill submarined and left the current situation. I would I have noted down some things that I would add as additional factors, and so let me make this motion on line 11. I would move that we delete the phrase "the excellence of the result obtained," and then insert, let's say, the following language, and I've got probably add an additional line to this bill because of the number of factors that I, but I think we definitely should have in there the complexity of the estate. I think we should have in there the complexity of the tax issues. That may very well take care of. Let me read to you the other two that I have, and more for opinion rather than part of my emotion, because I think that those two categories may satisfy these other. Quite often the nature, the amount, and the title of property involved is very significant, and that may just be part and parcel of the complexity of the estate.
Yeah, I would think so.
The other thing is post-mortem tax planning problems. And there, again, perhaps that may be involved in the broader category of complex tax issues. Because more and more you get into tax consequences to the recipients of the estate that can be determined during the administration of the estate.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to suggest that either we get get one of the schedules that's presently being used or more than one, or get someone here who does a good deal of work in this area and give us some accurate guidance. Because I think we're just pretty sure.
The bar testified on this bill before. They didn't come in on this bill over here, did they?
No.
Well, is that the committee's sense that it would prefer to await action?
In Salem, they do a lot of probating. We couldn't get one down here at this point.
Well, I think if you want to look at a schedule, you know, we could ask one of the bank representatives to bring their schedule down. But I know how they break it down.
Mm-hmm.
and
yeah, I think one from the bank trust department would be another good place to go.
All right, well, I have no objection if you want to get further testimony on the bill.
Can we ask Joan to follow up on those leads?
Take care.
Okay.
708.
Is financial disclosure of the customer's financial records. There were proposed amendments handed out last time submitted by the City of Portland, dated June 10th. Here are new proposed amendments. It says agreed to by the Portland Police Bureau and the Oregon Bankers Association.
Are these in lieu of the previous amendments?
Well, there he is. I tried to ask him.
Brother?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they are. They say the same thing, but we cleaned them up the other night. We are in agreement.
All right. Let's consider the proposed amendments being distributed now, dated 6/17/77. The first of which would be on page 2 of printed bill, line 35. To insert the language, this section shall not preclude a financial institution in its discretion from initiating contact with and thereafter communicating with and disclosing customer financial records to appropriate state or local agencies concerning any suspected violation of the law. Is there a motion to adopt that amendment?
So moved.
Is there further discussion? Page 5 of the printed bill, following line 25, add the words, or add the following. As used in this section, account information means the number of customer account items dishonored, or which created overdrafts, dollar volume of dishonored items, and items which, when paid, created overdrafts, statement explaining any credit arrangements between the financial institution and the customer to pay overdrafts, dates and amounts of deposits and debits to a customer's account, the account balance in such dates, a copy of the customer's signature card, and the dates the account opened or closed. Is there a motion to adopt that amendment?
So moved.
Further discussion? Any objection? Okay, the next one's longer. We'll just read that ourselves. I guess that's part of that single amendment. Okay.
What is the specific rationale for limiting the period of disclosure to 15 days before and 15 days following the occurrence? Frank?
Brian, would you like to come up front where we can pick up your...
Has Mr. Kane seen a copy of these amendments? Henry, have you seen a copy of these proposed amendments?
I've seen an earlier version of the current one. I have not seen.
Why don't we provide Henry a copy of that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Frank Brown with the Oregon Bankers Association. The 15-day or the limitation period would preclude a fishing expedition that may go on and on and on. In other words, if there is a reoccurrence or a different criminal investigation, the informal inquiry on one criminal investigation on a customer would not permit the investigation on a subsequent inquiry. Just places a time limit.
There is a question.
What do you do in this situation? I'm not sure that this would necessarily restrict it, but where you have an individual who's passing a whole bunch of forged or bogus checks over a period longer than 15 days before you find that somebody finally wises up to it.
Yes, Ken Sherman, our legal counsel, would like to respond.
I'm Ken Sherman with Yerman, Sherman & Bryan, 687 Court Street. Our feeling on that was that if through this informal disclosure the police determined that there was a pattern of that kind of activity, that they could then go through the more formal disclosure provided for in the bill by getting a summons or a subpoena or a search warrant, as the case might call for, and approach it on that basis. But once we get into that long-range investigation, where there's a great deal in the way of records being disclosed, the bill's basic position is that that should take place only with those due process protections.
I would further point out that in such an instance, the bank would be as interested as anyone in pursuing the matter, and your previously adopted amendment at the top of the page would we'd be very anxious to become involved ourselves.
Other questions, Mr. Chairman? I suppose also, and you correct me if I'm wrong on this, that if you consider the passage of each check, or the date of each check, a separate occurrence, then basically you would be entitled to release information, all information, within a 30-day span of each of those occurrences.
That's correct, under the language of the bill.
So the restriction is not as to when you may release the information, but as to the period that the information covers.
That's correct.
So that if the investigation is made 20 days after the passage of the check, the authorization is for you to release information that covers a period only 15 days before and 15 days subsequent.
That's right.
Mr. Kane, have you reviewed the amendments?
Yes, I have. And
you have any comments?
Rick Kane, representing the Oregon Independent Retail Grocers Association. I provided a letter that sets forth our objections in some detail and cites the U.S. Supreme Court decision of last year that says there is no constitutional right of privacy when people deal with negotiable instruments that are in the hands of third parties. Everybody, of course, pays attention to the check problem. It's a serious one. The Oregonian had an article on a $29,000 forged check matter in the Milwaukee area. The problem is much larger than bogus checks, as at least I see it. We're talking about embezzlement, we're talking about conversion, we're talking about any number of categories of fraud that the banks are the intermediaries on, because they have the money and they handle the negotiable instruments. Now, if you limit power of a law enforcement agency to a very short period of time, 15 days prior and 15 days following the date of occurrence of the account transaction, then anything that falls outside of it is not subject to disclosure to a law enforcement agency. I suspect that we would, if the committee wants to proceed with the bill, that the period of time should be longer. There should not be any need to engage in artificial segmenting of the investigative process, particularly when, if I may repeat, we're talking about more than bogus checks. We're talking about the possibilities of conversion, embezzlement, and the like that can make the average
check case look very small. But this does inhibit or prevent a law enforcement agency from operating with full effectiveness. And I noticed that there's a reference to police or sheriff's department or district attorney's office in this state. It apparently would exclude federal law enforcement authorities. I don't know the intent or whether the federal agencies would then be barred from following up on investigations of possible violations of federal law, but I think the 15-day segmental period is much too short. I think it's very artificial, and using the technique of saying, well, each new occurrence is a different 15-day segment before and after, just is a reflection, as I see it, of the artificiality of that short time span.
What do you propose as a time span?
If there is to be a time span, 90 days before and after. Check fraud and the others sometimes go over an extended period of time. The McKesson-Robbins fraud in the 30s went on for years before it was detected. That was, I think, $37 million in pre-World War II dollars.
Further discussion?
Somebody's got their hand up.
Is it your opinion,
President Gears?
Is it your opinion that, I'm sorry, I haven't had a chance to really read and digest the bill and fully comprehend either background of it. I get the general idea, but I don't understand. Do you think the bill would in any way run counter to the Supreme Court case you just
It's hard to say offhand because the Supreme Court decision, there are actually two decisions. One upheld the right of Congress to require banks to keep records otherwise that would be destroyed. The decision I'm referring to said that there was no Fourth Amendment to the Constitution right of privacy in terms of records maintained by a bank pursuant to federal law, because these are negotiable instruments and papers in the hands of large numbers of third parties.
Through the normal course.
That is right. As distinct from a private letter, say, a client, it's United States versus Miller. I have that in mind.
It's an older case.
No, it's very recent, about 1 year old or so, and it is United States versus Miller, 425 U.S. 435, a 1976 decision. It is quoted at length in my June 13 letter to the chairman and members of the committee. The Supreme Court said that bank records.
My question, Henry, is: do you think the bill contemplating for a moment that we might adopt the amendments, let's assume the amendments are adopted, do you think that still we would infringe the decision in U.S. versus Miller?
No, it would not be in conflict. It would just say that the state of Oregon was giving people who do business with banks more protection from law enforcement agency investigation than the U.S. Supreme Court has said is necessary at the federal level.
I cited the U.S. Miller case also in our testimony. I'd like to point out that the Congress has since acted with regard to the Revenue Act of last year and has imposed some privacy restrictions on the IRS that are similar to this bill, and they're further contemplating handling the federal agencies, which of course we don't address in this act. Ken, add something else?
Well, I just wanted to add very briefly that first of all, we don't perceive this as a
as a constitutional question. It's a question of the fiduciary relationship between the bank and its customer. Secondly, as far as the question of this bill limiting the power of the police, I think the obvious response to that is that the police are behind this bill now in regard to these amendments. And as far as the 15-day period, we felt that we had to cut it off somewhere. Obviously, again, if we find or police find that there is an ongoing problem, continuous problem, that's reflected by the information available through this more informal process, they may then proceed to acquire additional information through the more formal process. So we feel that the bill already speaks to that problem.
Is there further discussion? Representative Gardner?
You are opposed to the 90-day provision.
Yes, we would be opposed to that as being as essentially setting up a situation where you could have fishing expeditions, which would not, in our opinion, be proper.
Is there some period between 15 and 90 that we could agree upon so we could all get behind the bill?
In view of the fact that each transaction sets up a separate 30, and remember that this is a 30-day period, not a 15-day period, in view of the fact that each transaction sets up a separate 30-day period so that the police can look at this check and 30 days each way of that and this check and this one and so on, we don't really think that the 15-day provision is unreasonable, and we would like to see the bill adopted as proposed in the amendments.
Mr. Kelly?
Very briefly, Mr. Chairman, Mark Kelly with the City of Portland. Here. The language 15 days prior to and 15 days after was worked out in cooperation with the city and the Portland City Police Department, and we go along with that language completely, just for the record, with that time frame. We understand what the bank is trying to get at. We believe that gives us adequate time to do most of our work, and that takes longer, they're correct that we can go the way of subpoena and court order if we need the records.
Can I ask a question, Mr. King? Now, in view of that, and as I understand your interests being those of the commercial person who's gotten hurt by the bad check problem, or maybe the series of them, and may get hurt in the interim, what is your objection to that? Because basically, your store or the grocer who is apt to get the check is going to turn it over to the police anyway, right? If he goes about the best chance he's got of getting it. Now, I know a lot of them try to go out there and say it.
Well, if it is understood that this means each occurrence is a separate transaction that covers the 30-day period, then the objection I have voiced would be moot. But I've attempted to address myself not only to the check problem, which is of course of immediate interest to retailers, but to the larger problem of conversion, embezzlement, and fraud that extends over a period of time. I can conceive of, we'll say, somebody engaged in a very elaborate fraud scheme who has done one thing within a 30-day period and has done nothing else that would allow a law enforcement agency to get material beyond that 30-day period, because presumably that individual had good counsel who read the statute and said, just do one at a time and don't give the police any leeway or authority to go outside that 30-day.
But how does that apply to grocery? I mean, I can't see how that you apply that problem to a grocer or the regular commercial transaction.
Well, your regular. I can assume that each bad check that is passed would be a separate transaction, but I can also conceive of an instance where a grocery store operator has a manager who has engaged in a rather elaborate scheme of fraud. There's just one transaction that can be traced, and under the way I understand this amendment, the law enforcement authorities couldn't go outside that 30-day period.
Well, that's not absolutely correct, Mr. Chairman. That's not absolutely correct. If they have reason to believe that there is fraud ongoing, they still have the, if they don't come within the 30 days, they still have the opportunity to go to the court and get the court order.
Well, the problem with the court order, sir, as you may be aware, a search warrant has a large number of additional requirements that are referred to in United States versus Miller. It was dealt with in a footnote, which I have quoted, and I have seen, perhaps it's a confidential Portland police report that discusses the differences between a summons and a search warrant, where so much more is required. I can conceive of the possibility the police may have a well-developed suspicion, but it will not be sufficient as a matter of law to authorize a court to issue a search warrant.
Mr. Chairman, the informal procedures that are a part of your amendment would apply to one or more inquiries, but if suspected long-term fraud or criminal activity, it is not unusual for a bank to reconstruct the financial records for 10, 15, 20 years. And obviously it's not a question of search warrant, it's a question of reestablishing what the transactions were during that period of time. And that procedure is provided for in the bill after due process.
Is there further discussion? Is there a motion to adopt subsection 6? The previous motion I asked for was only wound up being with one part of what is really one full amendment. So sub 6 on the amendment.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Is there discussion? Is there objection?
Question, Mr. Chairman, before you...
Doesn't do this.
Before the attorney for the bank, is it fair to say that what you're after in this bill is the guarantee of the judicial process before you release the material that you've been otherwise releasing?
Yes, I think that's accurate, at least in part. Our concern here is that across the country we are seeing a growing concern among courts, among consumers, for the protection of these kind of records. We recognize, obviously, that there's a long-standing traditional fiduciary relationship between a bank and its customers. And for the bank to be handing these items of information out, whereas that process may lead to substantial penalties for the customer, without any review or even without any notice to the customer, we think is wrong. And we want to educate our own people in the banking industry to their responsibilities in this regard, and we want to draw some lines, set some ground rules, and we hope that the bill will do that.
And in the one case that still bothers retail grocers, the possible one transaction fraud or embezzlement procedure that I don't quite visualize, but I understand the point he brought up, I think. They could get at that by going and say, hey, we think this guy's embezzling, here's our preliminary evidence, they give it to the police, they go through the due process and get at your record.
That's correct, and if I understand the example correctly, if there was information coming to the police which tended to establish that there had been a violation of the law involving the use of an account and involving account information as defined in the amendments, then the police could, even without that formal process, through the amendments, proceed to get that information on that one-time occurrence.
Further discussion, is there a motion on the bill as amended?
Move
the floor to your pass. Senate Bill 708 as amended to the floor to be engrossed and with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Blumenauer? Ugas?
Aye.
Brohmeyer?
No.
Gronkowski? Lombard?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye.
Passed.
751.
Chairman, I give notice of possible minority report on Senate Bill 708.
Well, there were no proposed amendments to 751, and there were no objections to the bill.
What's the number, please?
751.
Bill's all right.
So motion on 751, Senator Gardner.
Move Senate Bill 751 to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Is there further discussion?
I have the according to the information I have, the anchors testified that this is the only apparently the party must respond within 1 year, is it?
The last section of the bill provides that actions brought against the garnishee by a judgment creditor would be taken within 1 year from the date of service of the garnishment.
Okay, and then you raised another question about release of safe deposit boxes.
That was one example we used as a justification of what happens when a garnishment is served. Mm-hmm. And we are, in fact, holding a safe deposit box, and no action is taken by the judgment creditor. We would be liable for until we got a release for the 10-year period.
Under this, you would be liable for the 1 year.
For at the end of the 1 year from the date of that service, right. And they could serve it as many times, but from the date of that service, we could release the box.
That's my right.
What's 23185?
Is that
here's
his own? 23185.
That's the
same equivalent of federal
rate regarding some
extensions.
Any further discussion?
Clerk will call the
roll.
Warner?
Aye.
Gilgowski?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye.
Then we promise to stay, we'll take about a 3 minute stretch of lunch break. Come right back and finish the other two guests. Okay. Do you promise? I have a conjoint.
No consideration.
It's literally a turn order, 879.
And the questions that came up, the main issue seemed to be whether the committee wanted to allow service on somebody who's over 14 who is not necessarily a member of the family. And that appears in several sections in the bill. The other question was whether 14 days, they're making the uniform 14-day provision for answering, and there was some question as to whether that was adequate.
Now let's take those in the order that they appear in the bill. The first which of those different questions arises first in the bill?
Mr. Chairman.
President Richards?
Page 3, line 20, subsection 4, the 14-day provision reduces 4 weeks Oh, excuse me. That during the hearing, the bill was amended. That section was amended, and the deleted language was restored, and the restored language, I mean, and the new language was deleted.
Okay.
From 20, that goes in line 20 and 22.
Line 20 and line 22.
Also, in line 20, or did the language in line 20 come out within the
within
state?
Within the state.
Yeah. All right, good. Okay. Now, where is the language that relates to the restriction of the
14-year-olds?
Page 4, line 23.
Yeah, 4, line 23.
Yeah, here we go. Okay. So section D of section 5.
And that's in subsection E of section 5, and it's in subsection 8 of section 5 on page 5. Lines 5 and 27.
All right, what's the committee's pleasure on that?
I've got problems with it if he's not related. I think maybe some of the...
Mr. Harris, do you want to come up here? Mr. Roberts, so you could join us too. I put you here on this bill also.
Well, I've got mild interest now.
Yeah. I suppose
you didn't like that one.
It's possible there would be one bill in which he has appeared in which he has only a mild interest, but it's improbable. Okay. Representative, excuse me.
I'm going to interrupt you and restore that other language.
Which timbers?
Well, it's. I think in essence what it says is a member of the family who's over 14 years. Probably the first place I notice it is the...
How does the present language read?
Well, if I can... On page 5, I think...
On page
5
and line
26
and 27, the to a member of his family language is there. In the others, it doesn't seem to be there.
Yeah, that's what's kind of interesting.
Assuming the bill was printed accurately. I didn't check it, I admit.
Let's see, it's 15080.
Well, where they, like on page 4, lines 21 through 24, they've done an interesting job of kind of interspersing new with old.
Well, I guess it just reads, if the person cannot be found, then by leaving a copy thereof at the residence or usual place of abode of the clerk or agent.
Correct. And our, Mr. Chairman, our main problem on subsection 1 of 15080 is not so much the residential disturbance, and the great correction in that is the registered agent.
Okay. Yeah, that's in section 5 you're referring to.
No, section 5, line 12.
You're talking about corporation service.
Right, corporation service of that section. That, we haven't had any problems because the statute is presently like what we're trying to get in 15080 subsection 1. That corporation service now says you can serve it on any person at the household over 14.
Then why did you get the 14 years age in those, in both that and the partnership service?
Okay, the legislative council did that. They felt that the partnership, that all statutes should be the same, and they incorporated all of these references into the partnership, which is no problem. The partnerships have never been a problem.
Actually, in that case, Mr. Chairman, the 14 years seems to upgrade the possibility of service there, but strangely enough, but I suppose in drafting it, you would make the assumption that not many corporations or partners would have a person under, that is in the original code, have a person under 14, and here, just for the sake of uniformity, the legislative council used the 14, which is used over here when you're talking about personal service in the family. Jeez. They got to the
okay.
14.
Well,
what it looked like, just trying to understand.
The change in sub D would continue the present law except
would impose an age limitation.
Well,
it has not previously existed.
No, the age limitation is presently in the statute. It's on any person over the age of 14.
No, with respect to someone.
Not in corporations and partnerships.
It imposes that age limit as to sub one.
That's correct. It imposes the minimum age 14 or over.
I think the real problem that the committee was having in the discussion the other day was with respect to the personal, with respect
subsection
to sub
eight. Right.
If there's no other comment on sub B of one, let's go over to eight.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Richards.
I would move to restore the original language to a member of his family and move deletion of the language on line 27 by leaving a copy thereof with any person.
Yeah, they've completely redone the 1508-0, Mr. Chairman. And renumbered and lettered the paragraphs. And just looking at it real quickly, it seems to limit the 14-year age thing to people other than corporate. It doesn't refer to the 14 years of age when you talk about corporate or partnership service. But that seems to warrant a case of personal.
Are you talking about the original bill, Mr. Chairman? Did you know that it's on the consent calendar?
This bill.
Yes. Chairman, I move we recall 820.
It's not correct.
879.
Did we have to act on?
No.
We've never voted on this bill.
No, you have not. That's what I told you about this morning.
Yeah, how do we get a report like this?
Well, let me find out.
Yeah, it is on the consent calendar, and we got one more day to knock it off.
Let's just proceed right now as if the bill were in front of us.
Well, Mr. Chairman, why don't I make a motion we recall it from the debt? You'll need that.
All right. Is there any objection? Right, now the bill is recalled, shall we proceed with the consideration? Representative Richards moves in subsection 8 of section 5 of the bill, lines 26 and 20, well, it's really 26 through 30, to restore the deleted language and to delete all the proposed new language. Representative Rutherford?
I don't know why this question never came up before, but it occurs to me now. Has a member of the family ever been defined judicially?
That's has been the problem. Now the courts has been so different in their ruling. What is Multnomah County is just about unanimous in their ruling that any person living together is family. We do have a couple of other counties that don't rule that way, and that creates a problem. But they have
rules. A little more open line than I think.
But they have rules. Multnomah County Circuit and District Court judges have just, I don't think there's a judge one that hasn't ruled that. In fact, they've even ruled broader than that when it's become a statute of limitation question upon a personal injury case. You know, where that for some trickery reason somebody has tried to get around the statute.
Representative Rutherford?
Well, I suppose the reason that the language was sought to be deleted in the first place was to clarify this, and I can see where a person could believe that they made effective service upon someone living at the house who might be a stepson or stepdaughter, and could easily find themselves out of court. What I think we ought to do is try to define family by statute broad enough to take in those people who are living together.
Well, let's resolve first whether we want to go back to that language at all. The issue of the definition of family will not arise, as I would see it, unless we restore the old language.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Richards?
I have a question about your extension of my motion. That's lines 29 and 30. The plaintiff shall cause... where service under this subsection is made on one other than the defendant, the plaintiff shall cause to be mailed a certified true copy of the summons and complaint to the defendant at his usual place.
I guess that language could remain.
I'd prefer that it be.
Your motion is restated to exclude that deletion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gardner.
Mindful of the intent of the nature of the motion and also Mr. Harris's problem, it seems to me that instead of getting into a long, drawn-out discussion of what family includes, that we might be able to make just a very simple amendment in line 27 to take care of, I think, perhaps the concern of Representative Richards and perhaps even the concern of Representative Rutherford, and just leave the present language in there, but after the word who, just put instead of is, resides at. That would take in the situation, as long as the person is residing at the residence, they would perhaps be considered, as in Multnomah County case, family, and also would have a sufficient nexus to the residence and to the defendant to be likely to give him the copy of the summons and complaint so that he would be properly served. That with the language in lines 29 and 30, I think would probably provide good service. And I would move to amend the motion of Representative Richards to accomplish that.
Well, I think that's really more a substitute motion. Representative Richards, do you want to withdraw your motion?
I withdraw my motion.
Representative Gardner moves that in line 27 of the bill, page 5, the word resides be substituted for the word is after who. Mr. Harris, do you have any comment?
No, I think it will still be a problem, but that's a good problem compared to what it is under the present statute.
Further discussion?
Chairman.
Representative Fuller.
So we're really getting at the milkman, maid, and drapery hanger problem that comes out. I would like to make an additional, or maybe if you want to take the vote on that, I have another motion to make.
Further discussion of Representative Gardner's motion.
Now, give it to me again now. We're on line 27, page 5, right?
Instead of the word is, you'd have the word resides. So it's any person over 14 years of age who resides at the abode.
You're restoring, in other words, you're crossing out all that heavy print in that line, right?
No.
Nope.
You leave everything in.
Only the paragraph is exactly as it is in the printed bill, except you make one further change, you put resides in place of is.
Okay, so you still don't care if he's a member of the family?
Correct.
Just so long as he resides there?
Correct.
That doesn't bother any of you who are making service. I don't have any experience in this, but you know, that doesn't create any kind of a legal problem.
Well,
give it to the neighbor.
Yes, certainly.
What if it's a foster child? Okay with you? Visiting cousin from Albuquerque.
Resides.
They reside there. Would
you cover that?
Well,
in fact,
the disadvantage,
I really don't know.
The disadvantage of the change in part, at least, is that it reintroduces a certain additional element of uncertainty. Greater than simply whether the person is there. The person is there or is not there. There can't be any doubt about that. Technically, though, the person could fail and could obviously be there and not be resident.
Not resident.
We do have that potential for frustrating effective service with possible consequences to running the statute of limitations. On the other hand, though, you do have the interest of the defendant in trying to maximize the assurance that the papers will actually get to the defendant.
I just say that I don't think you can draft something that's going to take care of everybody's concern and concern. And it's going to have to be a balancing type thing. If you go with any person there, then you have the possibility the defendant doesn't get service because someone has, who happens to be there, doesn't have enough interest in the concept that the defendant get the papers to make sure that he gets them. On the other hand, you know, it says over the age of 14. Well, you've got a question whether he's 13 or whether he's 15. That, there's a fact that has to be determined in that. So I would think that this would broaden the category of people that could help effectuate service, but yet on the other hand, retain some kind of a nexus there to make certain that the defendant gets the prior service, and I think it would be a good amendment for that reason.
Further discussion regarding the Garner's Amendment? Any objection, Amendment?
Mr. Chairman?
Reverend Fumar, I think I wanted an amendment. Reverend Fumar.
I may have a couple of them. The thing that concerns me here is suppose, say, you know, they give it to the kid and he runs out to play and, you know, drops into the gutter and floats away. Then they mail him one. But there's no requirement here that the mailing be done immediately. And there might be a question in the recipient's mind as to the time within which he or she has to answer to the court, because it doesn't say you have to send them a copy of the return of summons.
You could just maybe say immediately.
Well, I do want to do that, but I also want to go back to the time at which you have to answer. And the way Bill reads now, I believe it's 14 days. And I'm about ready, I think, to make a motion to be 20 days because of this mailing problem. Chairman, though, first in page 5, lines 29 and 30, I want to propose an amendment that would also apply to lines 25 and 26 on page 4. I would propose that in line 29, after the word cause, insert
what
the
page?
Word page 5. After the words "the plaintiff shall cause," add the word "immediately" to be mailed a true copy of the summons and complaint to the defendant as usual place of abode. Strike the period and add the words "together with a statement of the date, time, and place at which service was made." So in effect it would be doing nothing more than giving
cover letter.
It's a cover letter, or you could even have a stamp, or conceivably even the return of summons, if a copy of that were sent,
sure,
would have that information. But otherwise, you're not going to know when your time started to run if you lost the original summons.
It's kind of like the DMV does on their mail apps.
Yeah. Would you like me to repeat that?
Yeah. Need to clear on the number. I assume you want that same amendment wherever that particular technique is.
That's right. I think it's only used utilized.
You want them to state when the service was made?
Yeah.
Would it be simpler to say when the answer must be entered in the case?
I don't think so. I don't want them to be answering for what the court or the statute says. And actually, a court might, you know, I don't know whether a court would regard it as jurisdictional if the 14-year-old ran away. And, you know, I take it that the service is, the time is supposed to run when it's left at the usual place of abode.
Correct. Starts, that's the day it starts. The next day is the first day.
Okay, but if they didn't get it.
If they didn't get it.
And in fact, a 14-year-old neighbor kid was served.
Then
when would the time run, or would service simply be defective?
No, the service, first of all, service would be defective. Under the present statute and under, if this has changed, who resides would be defective too, and it would not run. It would not start.
All right. Now, for purposes of jurisdiction, and I think we ought to be clear about the legal effect of lines 28 through 30. If good service is made on, let's say, the defendant's spouse who resides at the place, but for some reason follow-up cover letter and the summons complaint are not mailed, is that jurisdictional? Is there adequate jurisdiction over the person?
Well, I couldn't answer, but I would say that if they did not mail it, that it's not part of the service. That service is not completed.
So in other words, this isn't simply an information copy.
No,
this is half of the actions necessary to get jurisdiction over the person.
That's what it looks like to me, and that's what I would understand to be.
That's
just a safety for the defendant if other than the defendant himself is served personally.
But what we're saying is not just a part.
No, it's not just a...
Not simply courtesy, it's jurisdiction.
No, that's correct.
Further discussion of Representative Frommeyer's proposed rules. Is there any objection?
There's not.
Give me 3 minutes, Representative Frommeyer.
Yeah, on page 3, I would like to see the 14 days changed to 20 days on line 17.
Representative Frommeyer moves that on page 3, well, we've changed it back to 4 weeks for starters.
That's sub 4.
That's the other
case. Okay, excuse me.
Let's see, you're on line 17, page 3.
Right.
Frommeyer moves line 17, page 3 to change 14 to 20. Further discussion?
Do you have a particular reason why you feel that should be done?
Yeah, I just, well, in the counties like, this is statewide. Say a process server from Portland comes down and serves in Jackson County. In the metro area, I don't see any problem with 14 days, but I really think that for the smaller counties, particularly if they're served from another county, that by the time they figure out that they got to see their own lawyer, and then their own lawyer may decide they need a Portland lawyer, so that they might need the 20 days to do a sufficient job on the response.
How would you feel about 10 days within the county and 20 days elsewhere?
Well, that's the way it has been. That would simply mean restoring existing
language. That's what it has been. We're trying to get away from that if we could.
Seems to me there's somewhere in a uniform day.
It's a tremendous problem in the Tri-County area. All the way to Lane County, it's a problem. Especially with statute cases.
Federal court, 20 days.
Federal court's 20 days.
Oh, that's another reason to conform it. The uniform and conform to the federal.
First federal case is a little different to either a diversity case or a federal question case, which usually involves a governmental fine.
Further discussion of Representative Frommeyer's amendment? Is there an objection?
I object.
All right, further amendments, Representative Frommeyer?
No.
Representative Richards?
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make certain that the 14-year-old provision, the residency provision, might be extended to the other sections where it's applicable. It seemed to be. I don't know if that was clear on the record.
I don't think looking at the code or the section has been modified that it's a fit that we need to worry about anywhere else, but why don't we just instruct the Joan or whoever's going to make the chairman?
That's the only...
Review it.
It's just that.
See if in your mind you're...
Yes, the only other section that it pertains to in any other thing is the corporate service. That's the only thing. This is the controlling statute of all services. This is section 8. Other than page 4, subsection D, is corporation services. So that's the only time it...
And the partnership service.
Well, or your House of Representatives service.
Mr. Chairman,
even
though those apply to partnerships and corporate service, we're still in those sections saying you can leave it with any person over the age of 14 years at that residence. And one section we say we shouldn't do that, and then another section we say it's all right to do that.
Representative Garnier?
I guess if you're serving a corporation, for a general matter, people don't reside or live in, Jackson Towers or whatever. Same with corporations, and the people that are there over the age of 14 are generally employees.
I don't believe you're right. I think that in every case now, we've made it consistent. You've got to serve somebody over 14 except in this one area on line 10, page 5, where you talk about service of a minor under 14. See, everywhere else we've made a consistency in.
Have we?
That appears to be the case. I think looking at the statute here and trying to read this, but
there could be a little confusion. The corporation service, section D and E, is at the home.
No.
That's the substitute service of one corporation at the home of one of the persons. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, at the office, but subsection D, and I agree with her, that it is at the home.
But we still said that it has to be over 14 years, so we're consistent.
That's correct. That the other section, they reside at whatever.
Well, I would move that the language in paragraph B be amended to conform to the language which we adopted in paragraph 8, sub 8.
Right, so you're talking about resides at.
Resident.
Yeah. Resides at.
And E too, because we've got the same problem with respect to mailing that they do.
Okay. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection?
That also covers sub E.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, do you have any further questions?
Yeah, I have a technical problem with it. I'm not very substantive. Page 3, line 30, that section starts there, well, actually line 31, eliminates the 60-day requirement for return of the proof of service. I assume this is by the process server. And I wonder why that time limit was eliminated.
The time limit's been in there for a long time. The reason why it was requested removed is if you have a difficult defendant to serve, and you might serve him on the 59th date, yet it might be Clackamas County Court, and it wouldn't get there till the 61st date. And we have a judge, a couple of them, that says that's defective then. Because it did not get back to the court within 60 days. So that's the problem we're up against there. That it doesn't come up much, and it really clears up the issue that if the defendant served within the time the lawsuit, after the lawsuit was filed, before it's dismissed. Mm-hmm. But that's been the problem, is that if it's served the 59th day, and you could be like Representative Bromar said, it could be down in Southern Oregon, that the courthouse is. And by the time it could get the affidavit prepared and down there, there's 50 days of this fire.
Joyce, go ahead.
Page 4.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. Back to that same thing.
Do you want to object?
This is a sentence that doesn't read in line 30 and 31, whether you talk about the deletions or not.
We have to have four members object for the consent calendar. Why don't we just move it back to committee when it comes up?
I just don't think you can do that.
Wynton's office told me that this
I think it's the only procedure that. No, a motion to refer will apply to a bill like it's in California. But only on the floor, I think.
Wynton said first four objections, then motion on Tuesday.
But it still has the motion on the floor. I just wondered why we couldn't just do it on the consent calendar.
I don't know that.
Let me just kill it.
Chairman, on line 30 and 31, it does not follow if you read that sentence. There are three words missing. After the word or on line 31, don't you need words to the effect that a statement that the defendant cannot be found?
Or maybe an error of the
it's a non-sentence.
The way the statute president reaches.
I think it's referring to the proof. Proof of such service or proof that the defendant cannot be found.
In other words, they're just saying if it's not served, it's just going to be fine.
Well, and maybe if you were to rely on the comma in there, frankly, then it'd be.
Do you agree with me that it reads very awkwardly?
Why don't you just put the word think after all?
Lovely. piece of statement proof, I suppose.
With the proof of said service, or...
Well, you could delete the comma and just say, and then say, or proof that.
Mm-hmm. I move in. Sounds for tinkering.
Omar moves line 31, page 3, printed bill, delete the comma of the service, first the word proof after or is an objection. Joyce?
By proof, I think it would just mean a not found return, isn't that correct?
I hope so. I hope that's all you're saying.
Well, we're not changing the
rules. That's what they, he brought it up. I didn't
know
that.
That's what the word means since time immemorial, I assume. Joyce?
Page 4, lines 3 to 7, just read very poorly me because they've been chopped up. I would rewrite the composition.
Where now?
Page 4, lines 3 to 7. I would rewrite them to read, compensation to a sheriff or his deputy serving the summons shall be prescribed by law, period. If the person serving the summons is not a sheriff or his deputy, a reasonable fee shall be paid for the service.
Yeah, otherwise you don't know who's agreeing to it.
That's right.
That's a good change. I'd move that change, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, further discussion? Harris, you probably have a little bit of passing interest in this subsection.
The only reason now, we have run into the problem. No, that's fine. In fact, we live within the sheriff's statute, except on statute of limitations cases. And that has been a problem, too, that where for some reason the defendant is hiding out down in, say, Marion County, and you only have a couple of days to serve it, or something of this nature. So that's why that some of the lawyers brought this up to clear the question, because some judges have ruled different ways on different cost bills.
Bring the discussion amendments and objects to the thanks, Joyce.
In the subsection 1 under section 5, you're dealing with action against the private corporation. Then down in subsection E, you talk about a defendant and his place of abode, and I wonder if you actually... I realize that you can't serve the president of the corporation, but it seems you'll have to rewrite that section because your defendant isn't a person, unless in corporation law you normally use that kind of language.
Correct. It is a defendant. The corporation would be a defendant.
Did you say
in the lawsuit?
Corporation, his place of abode, or the place of business of the corporation?
Well, this is the one where we're serving the corporate officers to their residence because we haven't been able to find them at the...
We're still with the zone of B,
which is the residence.
So we're talking about an individual here, not a corporation.
Right.
Well, you're talking
about section B, yeah.
You're serving at the legal place of abode of any person identified in B or C. And when you're making service under that subsection, you also cause to be mailed a certified true copy of the summons and complaint to the, to the person served.
Person served. I agree.
Good for you, Joyce.
Yeah, that is good.
Okay.
In the record, Joyce.
I knew that $5,000 a month salary was for you.
Oh, keep coming.
Okay. The chairman is in line 27, page 4, the words person served be substituted for
defendant.
No objection. Now, I guess we have the same problem somewhere else. Well, I'm going to get ahead of you. Go ahead. What's your next?
Yeah, you might have over on page 5 on line 30.
Joyce, go ahead. I'm just getting ahead of you.
Okay, there's a related question, though. Page 5. You have a similar service upon someone 14 years of age when you're dealing with a partnership. Why don't you mail a copy after you cause that kind of service against the partnership?
Sub 4?
Well, page 5, subsection E in line 3, is where you serve someone 14 years of age or older to a partnership. Now, and then there's no parallel provision as there is against the corporation to mail a copy of that service.
To the
person served.
So you would just put in what is
yeah,
E.
Section E should have been.
Yeah, but the chair moves the insertion
sub F, which provides for the mailing of a certified true copy in the same manner as sub D, section 5. Any objection? Next.
Page 6, line 28. If, you're talking about proof of service, okay, if by any other person, well, who else can serve except who is designated in 15060, which was the previous subsection A, if service is by any person designated in 15060. 15060 seems to be exclusive to me, so I don't understand where
there was an amendment in the Senate on 060 that took out, for reasons that we were worried about the type of insurance that was originally put in. The federal legislation, there was a federal bill introduced to outlaw private sponsored service unless the states put some restriction, some requirement. So we had an errors and omissions policy in 15060, and the debate got over in the Senate that it might be prohibited as years go on. So that section was deleted, and that's why the reference to 15060, because if it was other than a bonded person in 15060, then it was supposed to be by affidavit key. So the insurance provision was, the errors and omission provision was deleted. And I'm not going to push it, but I'd sure like to see some minimal bond, $1,000 bond in 15060. No restriction of anyone being able to get into it, except it would just clarify the issue.
I'm not sure I understand it.
So well, let me come back to her original point. Her original point was that having made that deletion, we still need the reference in sub B.
Well, no, we wouldn't need, if we're not going to put the insurance portion of it in, then we wouldn't need the reference in sub B. See, that's where they didn't delete sub B. They only deleted the portion out of 15060.
Yeah. So, 15060, with that deletion, wait, does that describe everybody there?
Yeah, 15060 is any person who's not a party to an attorney to the action over the age of 18, with no other restrictions.
All right, so everybody would prove service by certificate.
Right, if it's left the way it is.
All right.
And if the committee doesn't feel any type of, just, I don't want any strong requirements for anybody, but if they don't feel any requirements for a meeting, then I would suggest that the affidavit be replaced. I mean, be put back into the bill. It cuts down on the paperwork and not have to do an affidavit.
All right, so to make the bill fully consistent, unless we were to double back on the judgment about the bond, we just said delete sub B, wouldn't we? You don't need sub B now, do you?
No, we don't need sub B.
Isn't that your conclusion?
That was my point.
Chair moves to delete in the subparagraph D. Lines 20 and 29, page 6 of the printed bill. Further discussion? Any objection? Okay, next.
Page 7, line 1. The word thereof doesn't have very good antecedents, and I would just insert instead of thereof, or I would keep of service. Over on page 6, 34 and 35. In case of service other than by publication, the certificate, affidavit, or admission must state the time and place of service.
Chairman's restoration of the words of service, line 35, page 6, with a period, and the deletion of the word thereof, period, at the line 1, page 7. Objection. Next.
This is real minor, the last one. Page 12, line 15. Every place I've seen Billy said that persons who are permitted to serve service and by his or her authorized, I would delete authorized and insert permitted.
Insert what?
Permitted.
Trying to think which is better.
Well, yeah, me too.
I think authorized is better. Should we move that authorized be substituted for permitted in how many places does that occur? Well, I'll make the motion conceptually and you can locate the specific locations. Is there any objection? Now, I have a marginal note at that point that says clarify only the sheriff may participate. This is male, okay. Now, do you have an amendment to accomplish that or is it really necessary?
I think all those are necessary. All I would want is a nod yes, since all parties agree that the sections of 105.135, subsection 2, which deals with male and male, can only be accomplished by a sheriff, not by a private process server. My understanding is Mr. Harris, Mr. Monroe, who normally represents landlords, and I all think that that's appropriate interpretation. So if the statute says we think, we just want to make sure that this amendment to 105.130 doesn't change that.
Unless there's other indication, the record will help the committee. That is the committee's intention.
No, that's what you said.
Any discussions with those members? Roberts?
One thing came up during on page 6 when we eliminated subsection B about the affidavit, and that was a policy question. When you have a private process server, and I presume people who are employed for sometimes a short period of time, you've got service and then just a certificate of service, not an affidavit. I don't know what happens if 2 years down the road or a year down the road someone comes in and says, I never was personally served. Sometimes that person who filled out the certificate, not an affidavit, may not be found for testimony about whether or not there was personal service. I wonder what proof there would be in the record, what acceptable proof there would be in the record that of service. I don't, maybe that isn't a problem, but it came to mind that maybe an affidavit is a more formal statement of service by someone who we have, you know, no idea what standards of honesty of that person is. I guess maybe it's like went to law school in New York where sewer service is really prominent.
What? Sewer service.
What I'd like to add, since we've done so much work on this bill here, if the committee might consider 15060 adding in the section that the Senate deleted, a small paragraph to say that a person who holds himself out to serve process shall post a $1,000 bond, and then subsection, but the attorney may waive that provision. And that will clear up if the attorney waives the provision, then the person serving it must do it by affidavit.
What are the conditions of the bond?
No conditions. You just post $1,000 surety bond with the Secretary of State.
For what purpose?
Well, just so there is some requirement on who may serve without the attorney know who is serving it. In other words, so that he'll know the attorney, who he's using, if he's not using a private server, and the attorney wants to waive the bond or insurance, errors and omissions, if the attorney wants to have someone serve the document, not know that that person bonded, that's letting him do it.
Has there been a problem yet, Bob?
The only problem it's been is the Annunzio bill was a problem. And he had an amendment in there, and we got it taken out because due to the fact that the state, that Oregon is a prime example, does not have even a minimum requirement. And I don't want to go through any elaborate requirement to any agency.
I'm not talking about any congressional legislation. Is there, in fact, they in Oregon?
No, Oregon, we have not had any problems at all.
Process.
None at all. Chicago, New York, Philadelphia has had loads of them. But that's because they even had a problem in New York on the paid official problem, like they talk about sewer service.
I'm frankly a little reluctant to get into the area.
That's fine. And I would suggest that the affidavit be the portion that we deleted on the outdated service be reinstated. See that?
You mean with respect to persons under 1605 OB?
15, just say, I believe it's...
1506 OB?
Are you see that, or 15110?
Page 3, but I mean, the authorization is 1506, so you move affidavit for persons other than...
Affidavit.
Just be restored, the original length.
That's right, you just restore.
The language back in A and B.
Just restore it and delete the... if we're not going to have any requirements, the affidavit is... It should be there. In other words, at least it's an assumption that it was served.
All right, I don't have any problem with that. Chairman, still move the restoration of the language. Is there any objection? Okay, now there's a conflict in the bill.
There is a conflict because it's 2245, and when if you pass it off after you get it back, we will insert proper conflict amendments. Chairman.
Now wait a minute. Say that again. What?
We'll take care of this with a conflict amendment. This conflicts with the small claims bill.
Oh, all right. The full discussion on the bill's amendment.
Chairman, we have the conflict amendment now.
Okay, I don't know what the language would be. Well, conceptually, could you move the conflict amendment?
I just hate to see us wait till Tuesday to pull that bill off, the non-bill off the floor and put this one back. I think we could do it all by unanimous consent on Tuesday. Couldn't we?
Well, this bill will be ready by Tuesday.
Okay.
Printing and so forth.
All right. Well, I would move addition to the conflict amendment so we can do it all in one fell swoop.
Well, that's fine.
Okay. No objection. Any discussion of bills amendments? There's a motion of bills here.
I would move.
So far, I move to the bill 879, as amended, be reported to the floor to be engrossed into the due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Angus?
Aye.
Brunner?
Aye.
Lombard? Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Gardner? Myers?
Aye.
Can I carry the bill?
Yeah, just a second, I'll be trying to carry the bill. Is there a problem with this?
No.
They called me up first, they didn't answer. Mr. Hill, you want to come up?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to pass out some materials while... The materials I'm passing out are...
It'll be a 906 in 1 minute.
Proposed amendments?
Frank, you've been sitting here a long time.
Proposed amendments, it's 59 a memo from Commissioner Healy and an engrossed version of 59. It's a very functory change.
Representative Myers, members of the committee, I'm Ed Rothstein with the Department of Commerce Corporation Division, representing Mr. Healy. Mr. Healy's here also.
This is June 17th, and our notice for House Judiciary Committee for June 17th says plus sales not disposed of at morning work session June 17th, and there is no notice for this bill issued for this work session.
It says that for June 17th in the morning, it says plus bills not disposed of June 16th, and June 16th is 59.
Okay, just wanted to make sure.
You got a question here?
Yes, I do. I've got a copy.
Senate Bill 59's amendment says distributed date 616, essentially divide the bill in three parts.
Divide subsection 7.
Then subsection 7, yes. Are there any substantive changes?
No, none.
Is there a motion to adopt the amendments?
So moved.
Is there further discussion? Is there a motion to the bill as amended? So what does it mean, Senate Bill 59 as amended to the floor to be engrossed and to do pass recommendations? Is there further discussion? Clerk, call roll.
Warren Allen. Bugis.
Aye.
Bowmeyer.
Aye.
Wongowski. Lombard. Richards.
Aye.
Rutherford.
Aye.
Gardner. Myers.
Aye. So I'm sorry to wait so long for so little.
You can read less than 112 words in a sentence.
Much improved. Thank you for your cooperation and help. Okay, 906.
This is the one that would include municipal judges in the category of magistrates, and there's a proposed amendment.
Judge Fred Smith. In fact, I talked to him yesterday, and he said, "Oh no," he said, "he wasn't going to amend." He says Representative Martin wanted to do that because Fred's been marrying people, I guess, in Oswego, and gets himself.
Well, I don't think he's in any trouble yet. I don't think he's married to a boy, but I gather that he could be a partisan.
He'd like to. He's certainly a Catholic playing bingo.
I'd like to make it legal. I don't know why he wants to do this. I think he just got divorced. Is there a motion to adopt the amendments? If there's not, let's move on.
I will move to adopt the amendments, Mr. Chairman, and then speak to it.
Representative Fuller?
No, I think the genealogy of the measure is clear, but the judge apparently, in order to do the marriage, just has to go get himself made a district judge pro tem every time. And he just felt, I guess it would be easier to have statutory authority to perform it without going to that kind of public. Since I...
Bugis?
No.
Bowmeyer?
Aye.
Kowangowski? Lombard? Richards?
No.
Rutherford?
No.
Yes.
I have one problem that has absolutely nothing to do with the subject of the bill. On page 6, line 23, married women are put in a separate category, and I object to that with interest. On page 6, line 23, infants and married women are made into a special category, and I object to that.
What?
Page 6, line 23 of the bill. It has to do with material witnesses and giving surety that they'll appear. And for some reason, infants and married women are considered separate.
That's existing law.
I know it's existing law. I don't like to see the...
Chairman, deletion of the words and married woman, line 23, page 6.
What about the infants?
There may be some reason for infants, I don't know. But there can't be any reason for married women.
Well, that's a taste to read, you know, the... So the existing portion of the bill, you'll pick up some things that can be improved. Any objection to the
Christian name in there or something?
How about that? Well, it's not even mentioned. Are there bills like that that you...
Mr. Chairman, I suggest a similar arcade is up in line 1, that such a person is poor. Don't you think we ought to... Should we change that to industry? Form this from our
I mean, we're all poor.
Yeah.
Okay, the last housekeeping amendment I'm going to accept, and then we're going to go on to the bill. Do you have a motion that's in front of the
substitute indigent for poor?
Line 1, page 6, Representative Frontline moves to substitute the word indigent for poor.
Would you guys should hold and see how much the Senate messes up the bill if you work on this part.
See how much
they
want?
Chairman, just a gratuitous comment, a very quick one. But I think we should put Representative Frommeyer and perhaps some of these other people who are very concerned about these technical changes on a task force during this interim to go through the entire ORS, change all these outdated, sexist.
I've already done that.
We had a bill, and the guy wanted to do it on grammar. Let's get him and maybe the task force of one.
That's all the commas, the punctuation.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
I resent being singled up for that.
Is there further discussion of the bill?
I'm on my notes for task force of two.
Further discussion of the bill? Or Representative Weller?
I have a note here. It's related once more to anything, but Section 2, there was a question raised at the time of the hearing about whether they could issue a warrant for an offense committed or tribal within the territory of jurisdiction of the magistrate's court. And it strikes me that one of the witnesses raised a question about that, as to whether that was brought in what we wanted. But I can't put my finger on what it was.
Can't respond.
I don't remember.
Is there further discussion of the bill as amended? Is there a motion on the bill as amended?
Chairman, may I inquire as to whether you received the letter? I received a carbon copy in the mail today about a 3-page single-spaced letter raising several points from the judge now heard from the district court on the bill. It was addressed to you when I received it in the office today.
Did you bring it? I didn't see it. What do you got that to? Did you have a copy of the letter?
It is here. I'm sorry, it's the folder up there. That's it.
Do you remember the nature of it?
Some of the problems were technicality.
Steve, you want to come up to the mic?
Sorry. All I recall is that there were some technicalities and then the substance of his objection to the basic philosophy of making the magistrates pointing out that this was carefully considered and rejected in the 1973 revision of the code and kinds of things. But there were some technical problems that I'm not prepared to address. I just read it quickly this morning. Sorry.
All right, let's do this agree.
Hold it.
Hold it.
Turn it toward his fire.
Okay. Why don't you gentlemen stop by my... Oh, wait. Is it said to me, Stevie?
Yes, I just had a conscience check. And it arrived at 11:30.
Well, I'm going to another meeting from this one down the hall. Why don't you, I was going to say, leave your cards at... You can stop by my office on your way out. Leave your cards at my secretary, and I'll be happy to send you a copy of the letter so you can have a chance to respond. I'm not sure if you necessarily to come back up here, but you may want to be able to respond in writing.
I have no idea what this is. There's some constitutional issues that this resolves by passing this bill. I can't understand why it's now for... I've never heard from him on it at all.
Well, I'm exasperated to get this word at the last moment, but I'm more concerned with technical than I am at this point with philosophical questions. I think the committee's pretty clear on the philosophical issues, but if there are technical problems with the bill, that's what arrests me for the moment.
I understand.
You do understand there are technical questions raised, not just philosophical arguments.
They're both. It's my belief that, as I say, I read it very, very quickly. And it was a long letter, and some of the things I didn't understand.
Well, I think, to you too, gentlemen, I think it's safe to... I don't know what the other people think. I've had my doubts pretty well resolved.
Yeah, but we're concerned with time now, too, I think.
Well, you got...
halfway through, all you're going to do.
You're fine.
That'll give you anything we did.
You're served. I sent a back sheet on this bill to all of you. I don't know if you've had a chance to review it, but this has been gone over, just as way of information, it's been gone over considerably by our committees and thoroughly, and
Is Stauffer an active member?
He's a district court judge. He isn't even a member of our organization.
Oh.
In fact, he used to be a professor at the law school, and one of the professors is the one that raised this constitutional issue for a ticket he got in the city of Milwaukee. I don't understand why he would object to it at all.
Why don't you leave that?
The fact sheet?
Yeah,
I can't all of you want it.
Oh, you got one? Okay.
You got any materials?
We will be adjourned till 8:15 Monday.